Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home. Into the wild I'm going, into the wild I am. It's been a while, freedom child, since I left my roots back home.
Welcome to the Free Birth Society podcast. This is a radical space for women who are ready to celebrate their autonomous choices in birth, motherhood, and beyond. Together, we'll learn about wild birth through personal narrative, we'll explore the politics of birth, and we'll analyze everything that relates to our lives as women from a feminist perspective. Here's your host, Emily Saldea.
It's been a while, freedom child.
Oh, women, have you heard? The show is coming to Austin, Texas. Join me Saturday, November 16th for the first ever live recording of the Free Birth Society podcast. We'll have an amazing guest tell us her truly wild Texan free birth story, plus a tell-all Q&A with me. It will all be emceed by the epic Austin beloved local Devonna May. An actual evening of hanging out with free birthing women, basking in story medicine. Yes, please. Make it a date night or come with your besties. It's going to be so fun. Tickets are on sale now. Go grab yours and then come hug me in real life. Link for tickets are in the show notes. I'll see you soon.
All right. Welcome, Aisaba.
Peace.
Thank you for being here, calling in from New Orleans.
Yes, I'm here from New Orleans, San Francisco originally, but I do have New Orleans roots.
How long have you been living there?
It's been almost 14 years.
Oh, a long time.
Yeah, it's been since college, yeah.
So have you had all of your five children in New Orleans?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
All right, so you've got quite the story to tell with five births. So take us to the beginning. Who are you before you become a mom? And what do you do with your first birth? And then you'll just kind of take us through how that shapes the remaining stories.
Okay. So from California, came out here on an academic scholarship and met my husband within a year of being here. My person was plant-based and on a health journey, getting into grounding, getting into meditation, you know, studying all things spirituality, basically, and met my husband, and he was into all those things on a deeper level. So we conceived very early into our relationship. We conceived our daughter, and it was a spiritual thing. I had no knowledge of home birth, I did have an awareness about pregnancy outside the system. It wasn't even like a word for it or whatever. It was just really like, I have family members that have a lot of kids and I've seen people be pregnant and not go to the doctor.
Totally.
So that was very like, that was a concept. I didn't know what it was, but I was just like, we just gonna be pregnant and live our life. And so, you know, I had an awareness about that. So I'm in this plant-based pregnancy. With my first child, and basically I saw an OB for the first time, and me and her just didn't connect. We just didn't have a connection. And at the end of that first appointment, which I had started seeing her, like maybe it was like later than what people would usually go when they're first pregnant, you know. And oh, backstory, I had had two abortions in high school as well. And so I had done a dance with pregnancy already, but when I met my husband and we conceived, I knew I had already made a commitment to myself that I wasn't going that route again. And we loved each other. And I was like, okay, we're going to do this. And he was so excited because my husband is 4 years older than me. So it was like, even though I was like in college, he was like, let's do this, you know? So we did it. And so I didn't have a connection with the provider. And at the end of the appointment, she was like, I want to refer you to these midwives. And I was like, okay, like what that mean, you know? And she was telling me about them. And I was like, okay, so I didn't know if they were like hospital birth midwives, home birth. I didn't know anything. And so that was that. I got referred to the midwives. I saw them, and there was an interesting thing that I couldn't really put my hands on until really in the last few years, because my daughter's about to be 11. But in the last few years, I realized they were grooming me in my pregnancy. Whenever I did show up to see them, they would tell me no attachments, no aversions. That was a common theme that the midwives, there were like two of them at the time, they would tell me that, you know, throughout the care, and one of them more than the other, but it was like this thing they would say. And basically the midwives, I didn't know that they were like in the hospital. Like, so it was so much stuff I didn't know. And I had ended up meeting a community doula who my husband was connected to her husband some type of way. So I met her and we were working together and it was beautiful. And then she moved and she put me on with someone else. So when she put me on with someone else, it was like, it was beautiful. Me and the sister had a connection, but it was just like within a couple weeks, I was having my baby.
Yeah.
So it was just, and she lived around the corner from me. So it was cool, but it was also like, we couldn't do much. And she had multiple children and had her own life. So basically with that, the midwives were grooming me, for sabotage basically. And I ended up like missing a bunch of appointments, starting to go more at the end, and they wanted to do the membrane sweep. Basically I went to 42 with my first, and so I ended up getting induced. I got induced with, I believe it was either Cytotec or Cervidil, it was one of the two. And from that,
well, one is a pill that you take orally, and then one is placed in your vagina. So that'd be how you could know if you remember 11 years ago.
I think it was the one that was placed in my vagina.
So that's Cervidil.
I think it was Cervidil. Mm-hmm. And then we went to Pitocin. Mind you, I didn't even know. So they were just telling me, oh, it's just an induction. I'm doing everything to get this baby out me. Like everything. Cause I'm like, I knew I didn't want an induction, you know? And so, but nothing ever came to me like, oh, you can just stay at home, you know? And so went through all of that, got an induction, at 42, and when I look back at my medical records, it's interesting because I guess she was breached. She had meconium and she was breached and she had meconium or whatever. But I remember them trying to move me with the fabric. They were trying to move me to get her in some type of position or whatever. But they never told me in my labor she was breached. And so, you know, It was an interesting labor. There was a lot going on in my life at that moment. I mean, even when I was in college, it was like being at a Catholic university, a Catholic HBCU, being pregnant as a dorm student, having to figure out me and my husband's housing because we weren't living together yet. You know, it was just a lot. And, you know, I do feel sabotaged, but I also take responsibility for, like, I had a lot of shit going on, too. You know, but they didn't tell me a lot of things. And there is a lot of things like the multi-part induction, the level of like involvement that hospital staff has when you're birthing in, even when you're with midwives birthing in the hospital, like, it's still a hospital birth, you know? And like, even me not knowing until like they literally told me like maybe a week before I had her, like, so yeah, we're on the hospital floor, on this floor in the hospital across the street. I'm thinking I'm going to some type of like house or something different, you know, because they weren't in the hospital. Their appointments were in this like little thing where they had couches and candles and incense going. And, you know, it was nice. It was plants. It was blankets in there. Like, it felt chill. And then so I found out, oh, I'm going to the hospital.
That's and so, I was like, so messed up. It's so dark, the smoke and mirrors of medical midwifery. And like, that's literally intentional trickery. It's intentional. It's so manipulative. And I get that, yeah, it takes two to tango. Like, you weren't asking the right questions. Okay. But also, you are in the inferior position of the hierarchy. And just, I mean, I'm a broken record. The lack of transparency, the intentional lack of transparency with medical midwifery is really, really unethical.
Right. And I was being silenced. Like I said, they would tell me no attachments, no aversions. When I would ask questions, I remember them being like, is your baby daddy going to be at your birth? And I never, even though we weren't spiritually married or legally married at the time, but like we had a soul connection and we loved each other. So that was offensive to me because I'm like, why are y'all addressing him like that for one? And for two, like, why wouldn't he be at my birth? Like, why do you just assume that he's not going to be there?
And also, why are you calling him your partner?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there were things, you know, these were not midwives of color. That was another factor in it. But the one of the midwives I did like, but look, the way things played out, she wasn't the one that was really working with me too much, you know, like she had other things she had to do. I guess she wasn't on call. So my first birth ended up okay. So I get all the way to 7 centimeters dilated. I end up cracking and getting the epidural, which I did not want. No epidural. I did not want the induction. Like, I didn't want any of that shit. And right after that, my baby's heart rate hit the ground. Emergency C-section.
No.
Yeah. So that was my emergency C. She ended up being 9 pounds, 5 ounces. Like I said, meconium and breech. So from there, I remember the midwife telling me, like, as shit is going down, like, white coats are flying in, like, my mom's crying, like, my husband doesn't know what the fuck to do. She's like, I'm going to make sure you get a C-section to where you can have a vaginal birth in the future. Like, I'm going to make sure you get a favorable incision and stuff like that.
God.
So, you know, I go that route. I get the C-section because, you know, that's what they said I had to get or whatever. And, you know, she's born. I literally was knocked out and woke up screaming. Like, that's all I remember is waking up screaming, trying to figure out where my baby was. Cause I was feeling my stomach. I was like, I don't have a baby in me. Where is my baby? So I'm like screaming, screaming, screaming. And then, you know, people come in and they're like, calm down. You know, we're going to get your baby. We're going to get your baby. So I did end up breastfeeding her exclusively. I did have to pump for school, but I mean, I never supplemented or anything like that. I went back to school. I had her October. I went back to school in January. And so, you know, that was that. And then that was very depressing. That was a very dark time for me to plan a natural birth and, you know, to not get one, basically. And breastfeeding was the hardest thing on a cesarean. And I understand why women with C-sections don't make it through, because it's like you're fighting for your own life. You, like, literally, my mom stayed with me for about a week or two after she was born, because my mom was there for a month before the baby came. That's first grandbaby. She was super excited. So she was there. And basically with that, my mom was doing everything for my baby. All she would do was bring me to my baby to breastfeed. And I'm so lucky that that didn't fuck up my supply. I'm just a milk maker. Like, I really am. And I know that the body is designed to breastfeed, but also I have a lot, you know? And so, but my mom had her, and I didn't plan for it to be like that, but I was fucked up. I really was. And yeah, that's what it was. So then we,
and do you, what's the right word? Like, understand when you reference your emergency C-section, like, do you get what happened?
Oh yeah, I always knew. Yeah, I always knew that they did that. I always knew that it was a byproduct of the interference. And I knew that my baby was fine. Honestly, I always think back and be like, I really could have had my child at home. Like I just literally, I'll explain it as we get to the next birth, but like really that type of stuff was gate kept here. So like it's like people have been doing it, but if you don't know the people or if they don't feel like you're ready, you won't know. That's how it is. But New Orleans is very like people are doing it, you know?
Well, the whole gatekeeping thing is an interesting concept when we talk about a biological act, because like in a way, I could argue that it's impossible to gatekeep a biological act because no one can gatekeep your own biology, right? But then on the other side, of course, we could argue that if your consciousness does not see it as a possibility, then it almost isn't. Right? There still is always
That's
a
real.
slight chance because birth happens, like, everywhere in every way. But yeah, it's a really interesting concept because it is so social. It is so the parts that are gate kept are intellectual, right? Yeah. So yeah, I just wanted to name that because yeah, you clearly get it. And for anyone who this is maybe their first podcast, just to be clear, she used the term emergency C-section, but what she's saying, and please correct me if I'm off here, but what she's saying is it was manufactured. So she was having a normal pregnancy, has a normal healthy baby, but an emergency was manufactured primarily from the Pitocin, which is incredibly dangerous to be using on an unborn fetus and on a woman's womb. And so what really commonly happens in an induction is that the woman is put through a really intensely high amount of pharmaceutical drugs that force contractions that then deprive the baby of rest and restoration and oxygen replenishment. And so then the baby who will be on monitors via the mother will they will notice D cells or and dangerous low D cells. And so then the woman is rushed into air quotes emergency C-section, but so often, women walk away being like, oh shit, like me and my baby couldn't give birth. And your story is such a, painfully classic one where it wasn't that at all. It was
No.
you never got the chance to have a baby.
No. And so I knew that part of me, like it was like the part I didn't share is my daughter was born 2 days after my 21st birthday. I spent my 21st birthday crying, moping, because it was like I knew that if I went into that hospital and got an induction, I was going to have a C-section. Like there was a part of me that really knew.
There are deep, powerful secrets to your own sacred experience of womanhood that no one in your life knew to tell you. The time has come to fully awaken the wise woman within you and to claim your place on the ancient path of supporting holistic women's health. You're well aware of the devastating reality that is modern fertility, modern menstruation, industrial birth, the way our society treats menopause, and really all of the rites of passage for women from start to finish. We are countless generations deep now with girls initiated into womanhood with deep, lifelong, toxic shame. Grown women have no idea how to tell when they're fertile, how to prevent pregnancy, how to address menstrual challenges without pharmaceuticals. There's no room for how to harness the wisdom and gifts of our cycle's phases. Women are afraid of their own bodies, and they teach this to their daughters, and their daughters teach it to their daughters. This just isn't good enough, not for me, not for you, and certainly not for our daughters. And here we are, together in this time, wanting to do better, wanting to be better, to break the shame cycle, and to leave our lineage injected with power, wisdom, strength, and self-love. Join us for the next round of the Blood Mystery School. Our highly coveted program is channeled and run by two long-standing sisters of mine, women who are core leaders within Matriarch Rising Festival and Free Birth Society. Nancy Lucina is a shamanic facilitator and medicine woman. Kristen Hauser is a woman's holistic health expert. Together, they take you on a potent 8-week journey where you walk the medicine wheel of your own menstrual cycle's archetypes so that you can learn to guide the women of your community through cycle healing of all iterations. You will address the spiritual, energetic, hormonal, and biological aspects of every phase of the female cycle so that you are fully equipped to become the radical, sovereign cycle coach that your community really needs. The Blood Mystery School will pave the way for your career in cycle and fertility coaching, holistic women's health, and ceremony facilitation. This knowledge is foundational to any work in birth or women's health at large. We only run the Blood Mystery School once a year, so make sure you're on the wait list. The link is below. It is time that you walk with the knowledge all the women, and I do mean all, around you need to know. Let's be the ones that steer our bloodlines toward embodiment once and for all.
And so I was like going through it, but it was like, you know, not seeing like, oh, you can stay at home. Like you, there's other options other than, you know, doing this route. So basically that experience, when I was pregnant, I fell into all things birth, all things natural birth. So I knew that I was switching from psych to bio pre-med to get on track to go to nursing school and become a midwife, right? Because I'm thinking that's the only way to, be, to become a fucking midwife. Okay, so I start getting on that track, quickly learn that, you know, just in undergrad, not even, you know, going to that next level, but like, oh no. Like, I'm not interested in all of this, and I don't think it has to be all of this. We conceived my son, I guess that was April of the following year. So my daughter was like 1 and like 2 months or 3 months or some 4 months, something like that. She was like 1 and some months because when she was born, when he was born, she had just made 2. So basically we conceived him. And I found the only Black VBAC doctor in the city. This doctor is, she's a lot. She's a lot. She's not even practicing no more. But it was interesting because her backstory was that she had multiple C-sections and she never got the opportunity to VBAC. So her work started with really helping women do this in the medical system. But she experienced the dead baby and, you know, she went through some shit and she experienced a lot of blackballing, which made her super paranoid and crazy, which I could see, you know, in that system. And so basically I worked with her long ass doctor's appointments. They convinced me that, and I believed it, that I had to do all these things, which I wasn't even doing in my first pregnancy. It was really like, I remember doing the glucose test through eating like all this food and then getting tested. Like I did alternative things. I didn't go to all the appointments. So with this pregnancy now, because I'm a person who is high risk, you know, they play those games. I'm doing all the things that, you know, they're saying that I need to do to have this vaginal birth because I'm just like, I just need to have a vaginal birth, you know? And so I did everything. I did everything. And ultimately, I ended up, I had an induction at 41 weeks. So I do, like, my babies stay. They be perfectly fine, but they do what they do. And for her, it was like, for me to have a VBAC with her, I have to have my baby by 41 weeks. You know,
which that is so fucked because running a womb through an induction after surgery. I mean, not only insane. Is induction what led to surgery the first time, but then a womb that's, you know, somewhat freshly post-operative. I mean, a year and a half is not that long, or you said 2 years was your daughter. And then to put that through that trauma and pharmaceutical induction, yeah, it's like so dangerous. Okay, so then what happens?
So I ended up going in, and I mean, it started on, of course, they did the Foley Bub, and then it fell right out. They put the Pitocin. I did have a I did have a doula, and she was amazing. She's actually a close friend of mine. And ironically, this is so crazy. And I told her this recently. I was like, "Why you didn't tell me?" But anyway, I'll get back to that part. So my doula was a VBAC mom. She had her a first C-section, and then she home birthed with a midwife. And I remember meeting her mid-pregnancy, but she was moving. And then I ran into her again at the end of my pregnancy, and she hadn't moved yet. And so it was just so beautiful. We were at a Dr. Sebi, God rest his soul, but we were at his like lecture here in New Orleans. And I ran into her, and she was still here. So she was like, "I can work with you." But I had known her birth story because we had discussed it. And then we get to the end of pregnancy, and you know, I'm stressed out because you know they're trying to induce me, and I end up getting the induction, and she comes with me to the induction. And I mean, literally, I tell everybody I felt like I was dying. The maximum amount of Pitocin. She's arguing with nurses, she's moving their hands, like, but every time they're pushing it up, they're pushing it up. I had the maximum amount of induction, I mean, of Pitocin by the end with no epidural, with no pain medication. And I felt like I was dying. I had an outer body experience. I was speaking in tongues, and I felt like I was being lifted. Like I had to go. I had to go out of my physical body because I couldn't be there and get through that. And I went and I came back, and he it was time to push him out. And they telling me wait because the doctor ain't there yet. So, but it, you know, you can't really do that like that. I mean, some women I hear that they have, but like, how long does that really last? So she ended up getting in there and put my foot in the stirrups, and I'm on my back because she's telling me that she has back problems and she can't. But all through my pregnancy, she was telling me that I could birth him in however I wanted to. But then she talking about she got back problems and it's not gonna work for her. So I'm on the bed with my feet up. He was 8'12", second degree peritoneal tear. They shot me with some type of lidocaine or something in my yoni so that she could sew it up. But he came out. He flew out. She said, "You could have easily birthed out a 9'5" baby." I said, "Clearly." Like, cause she was they always made it seem like it was size. Like your baby would have never came out of here. And so when he came out, she was like, that was the thing. They would always be measuring me and, you know, doing that. Like, oh, if this baby gets too big, and it was like he flew out.
It's all
I tore
such
because I was
nonsense.
on my back, not because he was
Ugh.
big. When we get to the first home birth story, y'all gonna know why I'm saying that. But basically, yeah. So I tore. Because I was pushing him out on my back, I was
Of
going through
course.
coach pushing.
Of course.
And, you know, then I breastfed him perfectly. That first, however many hours that was. And then, you know, the bullshit starts. So my son is jaundiced and he has high bilirubin levels. And because of the high levels, they were claiming they didn't have the option of your baby going under the lights in the room. So they took him to the nurse, the NICU nurse, the well baby nursery, whatever that is. They took him there. I'm having to go back and forth on a sewed up yoni to breastfeed him. I'm catching him with formula under the thing. They saying they're not giving it to him, that they just want to have it there just in case he end up needing it. Because I'm not producing enough, but I'm a milk maker. So I'm like, I'm gonna produce enough. But it was so stressful. Like, I started pumping from the second they took my baby. And then they released me. They gave me one extra day. And then they moved me. They gave me one extra day in the hospital. They moved me to like a whole different floor than where my baby was. And they let me stay there an extra day. And then they released me and let my baby, and made my baby stay. So with that, basically, my baby was in the hospital for 2 days without me. And I was just pumping, taking a nap, driving to the hospital, staying as long as they could before they put me out, then going back home, pumping again, taking a little nap, driving to the hospital. And I was really tore up. You know, I was really tore up.
I really, really hope women hearing this are hearing this and realizing that they cannot go to the hospital.
Period.
You know, like, I really hope that if you think you should go to the hospital and you think this won't happen to you, like, get your head straight. This happens all the time.
Right. Because even if you get that unicorn, oh, nothing happened. My baby just came out. Like, my VBAC was straightforward. But here come the shenanigans in postpartum. Like, you cannot escape it. You cannot escape it.
And I also wouldn't call your birth straightforward.
Right.
You felt like you were dying and had to disassociate. Like, that's so hardcore. I mean, it's a torture. It's a torture chamber.
Right. I mean, like, he came out. You know what I'm saying?
Even though,
he was forced out, but I had him vaginally, you know, and I didn't have.
Like, our bar is so low, you know?
Low as hell.
I mean, obviously, you've raised your bar significantly.
Of course.
Obviously.
Of course.
But damn. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So you're now in the NICU hellscape of now they've medically kidnapped your baby.
Yeah. Yep. Medical kidnapping. And I had to do what I had to do to get him out.
Yep.
And so, you know, I did the pumping. I was seeing that there was only 2 to 3 nurses and there would be like 12 babies. And it was like, when I'm coming in, my baby is screaming, which I feel like has definitely impacted his personality today. And, you know, one day I'll tell him what happened, but I definitely feel like all the things that were done to him, the lights, you know, the screaming for long periods of time, because me being in there, they kept putting me out because I was watching them. I'm seeing, you guys cannot handle this many babies. You guys are overworked. And then some, like, there might be one nurse that's in there that's new, that's happy, that loves what she does, but the other two people is ready to go home.
Yeah.
And just imagine a new postpartum mom. It's, you struggle sometimes with your own baby. This woman is dealing with 3, 4 of somebody else's babies. And so, you know, I was just like, this is child abuse. Like, you guys are taking people's children under the medical advisement and this and that, but you guys are abusing these babies, you know? And so after that, I was like, I'm never giving birth in a hospital again. Fast forward. Here comes my third baby. I'm like, I done got this VBAC. Like, I'm good. I'm not doing this no more. I know my doula didn't have a baby at home. Her midwife don't practice, but we're going to figure this out. Like, because I'm not coming back here. So all my babies are 2 years apart up until this fifth one. So, you know, year and a half, pregnant again. All right. So with this baby, I was planning a home birth. I had a birth attendant, an unlicensed midwife. And that was at the end, though. So in the beginning, I knew I was birthing at home, but I did start off seeing a hospital midwife to get prenatal care.
Doesn't it go so deep?
Yes. I was seeing her and I was getting prenatal care. And it was weird because it was like I was denying everything. When I think back, I'm like, why was I even there? And totally. She was making it. It was a different hospital midwife, but still, she was a hospital midwife, and she was cool. And again, everything's good. You don't have to do this. We get to the end of pregnancy. I didn't know what my baby's gender was. I didn't do the ultrasounds or any, like, I didn't do any of that. And so basically, she told me, she was like, I talk about you to the board. She was like, I work with a board and they're basically saying, based on everything that, you know, I'm telling them, like, and you not coming to this ultrasound that she told me I didn't have to do. It was like, it's your choice. It's whatever. I have to release you of care. But that's at 37 weeks.
But your body, your choice, like informed consent, girlfriend, informed consent, baby friendly hospital. I mean,
I might have been 38 weeks pregnant. So I'm like,
well, I mean, what a blessing. What a blessing. Yeah.
Honestly. So I had a backup plan. So I had someone in community that I was working with. And basically I wasn't seeing her like that, but I was like, you know, we were working together or whatever. And so, you know, the parallel care also, that's what I should share. She was happy with that. And so that was what it was. I was getting parallel care and the lady released me a care. And I was just like, whatever, because I got this person in my back pocket. I was never coming to birth with you anyway. But I was also like, this is fucked up, because what if I was, you know? Seriously. And so she transferred me to a OB.
I mean, also, let me just say, not just that, but you are so primed for CPS involvement.
Right.
In that situation. That's real. Your case is, you were one, assuming your story doesn't go here because I don't know it, but assuming it doesn't, you are one shitty person's flagging you away from really experiencing a whole new level of
problem. I mean, with my son, that's what it was. Like, they kept threatening me because, you know, it's like, they know I'm plant-based. They know I'm not vaccinating. They know my other kid. Like, because I had already birthed in a hospital before. Yeah. So they already know. They know my kid isn't getting a name. Like, they know all these things. So it's like, at this point, it's on my record to where I'm a problem for them. Uh-huh. So, you know, basically with her, she transferred me to OBGYN. That happened to be, she transferred me to the OBGYN that was the OBGYN from my son. So it was like a you know, like a transfer like that. And basically with my VBAC. And so I had a dream that I had a stillbirth. Someone that I knew had a stillbirth, and I did some spiritual work around it. And the readings that came up were that there were some unforeseen circumstances that would be hard to deal with in a hospital, I mean, in a home birth situation. And so after those dreams and the spiritual work that I did, I ended up going to the hospital to give birth. That's a shift. Okay, so I ended up going to the hospital with her to give birth, which was completely not the plan, but it is what happened. And so with that...
But do you really feel like that was spirit guided or just fear?
Well, let me... When I get to the end of it, of what happened, you know, I mean, we'll kind of see.
Yeah.
So, because I still tussle with if she would have made it or not. So basically, the doctor that I was working with, it was like she had some type of surgery going on, again, her shit, to where she was like, the only way that you're going to be able to birth here. Oh, one of the themes, the first time I've ever had something come up in pregnancy, I had from because I wouldn't do the where I eat and I let the midwife test me, and I wouldn't do the glucose stuff. And she was like, well, give me something. So I'm like, I'm willing to monitor my own. I had two readings that were like high, like, well, no, it wasn't just two. It was 2 days worth of readings that were high. And then I started monitoring my own glucose levels through diet, and they were normal. They were normal through the rest of the time or whatever. But she put it down on paperwork because she took pictures of all of my chartings of my glucose and everything, which was hell monitoring that shit. But she took pictures of it and put that in her chart. And so they put me down as borderline gestational diabetes, which was the first time for that for me. And that was my only thing that had ever came up in any of my pregnancies. And so once she put me down for that OBGYN she transferred me to had, personal things going on. And with that, she was like, you have to be induced. So right, I was
so she manufactured again. It wasn't a real exactly. pregnancy. No. This is just bullshit. Yeah.
Bullshit. Exactly. So I ended up getting induced at 39 weeks. Huh. Lord. Got induced at 39 weeks, came in to an ultrasound at the 39 week induction. And she was like, if your baby's measuring over 8.5 pounds, we're going to do a C-section. And I'm like, but I had an 8-12 baby with you 2 years ago. And she was like, well, based on all of this. And so my baby was like measuring right on the nose. She ended up being 7'7", but she was measuring at like 8.5. So, you know, a pound, 2, 3, 4 pounds off, whatever. And so basically she was within that range. So they started the induction. And we're in the induction, like I'm feeling the waves, but I'm not feeling them like the way I felt them before. So I knew something was off at one point, but when we came in, my baby's head was down, you know? And so midway through labor, my baby flipped transverse. They say I was 7 centimeters dilated. My baby flipped transverse, which where your baby is can always, you know, like it can always change. Once you push your baby out, that's when it really matters how your baby is. But so she flipped transverse. That was heartbreaking. You know, they rushed in. What's going on? We lost the heart rate. They put the ultrasound on because they couldn't figure it out. They like, she's transverse. So they are like, you know, we're going to have to section this baby out because she was like, she couldn't do. I was pushing for a inversion, not knowing. Now I've seen one to know how, like, whoa, like never. But at the time, I'm like, if this is what it's going to take to get my baby out, inversion, suction, like do it. You know, I'm like, just, I want to birth, you know, I don't want to be cut. And so, yeah, basically that did not happen. And I went in the bathroom. I did all these, you know, all these movements that could try to flip my baby, do all of that. Cause I had known in pregnancy, this is my smallest baby. I could feel it, but also she would move a lot. She would like move her position a lot. So I had known, you know, she had done that. But she did it in labor. So ended up, and babies move, like that's the reality, but she ended up flipping. And when she flipped, that was C-section. They wasn't willing to do the other things. When she was born, she ended up having a velamentous cord insertion. So some people say, besides the transverse part, clearly you can't push a baby out that's transverse, but she might not have been transverse if I was having her at home. No, you know, no interruptions and all of that, but that's what she was in that situation. So that was the cause of the C-section, you know, on paper. And so when she was born, she had a velamentous cord insertion.
You want to explain that for people who don't know what that is?
So basically the vessels, the way they were inserted, they were like broken. They were inserted like into the side of her placenta, for one, like they weren't like all the way in the middle. And then like the vessels, the Wharton's jelly that covers the vessels were not like covering it. And they were like very, very like thin. Like it was like almost like if a wave hit the baby, like hit. And, you know, the baby's trying to make his way down the birth canal, you know, the cord could separate from the placenta. And so, you know, I've now heard of situations where, you know, women have had an intact birth without experiencing that, you know, without experiencing the worst possible scenario of that. But it can be a bad situation.
Yeah. And that's part of why, you know, there is a bag of fluids that holds the baby, right, to bolster the safety and protection of the baby. You know, most undisturbed births, women report that the waters don't open till the end, which I think is interesting in terms of protecting the baby. Not to suggest that your baby is unprotected if their waters are open. I'm not saying it like that, but there is an element of obvious protection for the baby to be sitting in her waters.
Yeah.
So what you tussle with around her life is the transverse piece.
Yeah, the transverse piece and you know, just her being born and you know, her being like this was, she was like, you know, I seen a lot of shit. She was like, but this, cause the doctor was a Black woman. So we talk, you know, and she's like, I seen a lot of shit, but yeah, like this was some shit. That's what she felt like it was like, you know, a situation that is like concerning, you know? And so when I look back, I feel like if I had stayed home, things would have been fine. But based on me going into the hospital, based on the dream that I had and the spiritual guidance that I got as a result of the dream, you know, I had an induction and, you know, that's, they weren't willing to do the things for me to birth her vaginally there, you know, so that was that situation. And so I was really depressed. Depression. That I feel like that was my worst C-section. That second one was like, it was life. Like it shattered me. It broke me down. It, you know, I really experienced postpartum depression. Like I remember having a friend come over right after I had my baby, like probably like within a day or two of getting home or whatever, something like that. And I just, the second I seen her face, I just started crying. Like, but it was like, for me to like not be doing all the prenatal care and for me to like have to look at my home birth supplies and like, you know, for me to think about, you know, like feeling like I had to choose between the safety of my baby and my own desires. And like, and I also battled with feeling like, was I selfish for still feeling like I still wanted a home birth? Like in terms of like, even after everything, feeling like I wanted a home birth at the cost of her life. Like, because now look at what potentially, not saying that it would have been that, but if I had stayed home and something had happened or whatever, but still, like that over, like now I'm sitting here, I can't do shit. Like I got these hemorrhoids, it's hemorrhoiding. Like I'm bleeding in two areas. Like, and then, oh, I didn't even tell you. So whatever medication they gave me, cause I didn't have a medication throughout the induction part. But once they was like, you know, we're gonna give you a C-section, they had to give me something. I had an allergic reaction to the medication they gave me. So after having her, I could not stop itching. So then they had to give me another medication on top of that to stop the itching. Then when I get home, my incision gets an infection.
Yeah. I mean, the itching is a very common symptom of narcotics. You know, when you see the crackheads itching on the street, like the narcotics cause most, like from, I've seen a lot of C-sections and I mean, in a way, you could call it an allergic reaction. Okay, I mean, the story is what it is. But if your baby had flipped transverse at home and stayed that way, you still could have transferred in.
Right.
And the only reason I'm saying that is because, you know, so many women listen to this podcast and are going to put themselves in this situation and, you know, and, you know, yeah, things are what they are, but for someone trying this on, you know, that is another option. I'm not pretending that we can guarantee outcomes, obviously.
Right. The reality is you can always be at home, stay your ass home. And if you decide to transfer to the hospital, you can do that. Like you don't have to go in and get induced and do all of these things. Like well, you don't have to start that way.
Right. Either. And transverse is a particular situation that's extremely rare at the time of birth. And also I think, and I'm not saying you in this scenario, but a lot of women, I don't think understand what transverse really is. Like, a lot of women will come to me that their baby's transverse, but it's just, it's like a peanut, you know, it's not a true horizontal lie. It's like, you know, they tuck in and they, anyway. So a lot of women get freaked out about this transverse thing throughout the pregnancy, which really, like, your baby's position is truly irrelevant until they're coming out. And it's very uncommon that a baby would stay in a transverse position at the time of birth. But even in that very rare scenario, my understanding of it, and from the stories I've collected, though there aren't many because it is quite rare, is you have time.
Right.
You know, it's not a situation like a placental abruption is like, act fast. You know, there are obviously emergencies that are within minutes, you know, of seriousness, of potential fatality. But transverse, my understanding of it is not really like that. And if you just think about the mechanics of it, yes, the baby cannot come out transverse, of course, which does mean if we don't deal with it, that baby would probably die, you know, okay.
Right.
Now, then the other piece that the hospital would never allow for is that babies move, you know, and I've seen
babies
move every which way, you know, and twins are an interesting one with transverse, because it's not uncommon that the second baby's transverse, but then they get their ass in gear and
they get in it
and they change. And that's part of what contractions are for, is to help
wiggle
them into position. So anyway, so, wow. Okay. That's really brutal. So postpartum depression, of course, rocks.
Yep.
Okay,
hospital.
What happens next?
I go. Yeah. So yeah, I ended up, you know, having an infection.
Right. Oh God.
All of those things. And so it was just horrible. And, so I really did some spiritual work. There was instead of between the third and the fourth child, it's 2 years, but it's like two and a half, two and three quarters. Like, it's, so it was closer to the 3 year mark. And that was like my period of being like, I'm never having a baby again unless I can have a baby at home.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as a woman, it was like finding somebody in community that would, you know, support somebody with just one C-section was like pulling teeth, because here in the state of Louisiana, you know, somebody within a system or carrying a medical license, you know, they say that home birth is illegal for a medical provider to attend at home.
And is there a VBAC ban? What's up with Louisiana with VBACs?
Yeah, so like a licensed midwife can't attend a VBAC at home in Louisiana.
The last thing, I'm just still kind of hung up on this third birth. The last thing I'm thinking about, just that's crossing my mind right now, is the spiritual guidance piece is interesting, because, and I say this like so sensitively, like I'm not challenging your story. I'm just kind of like thinking about it and trying on different perspectives for it. And I guess I'm making up that if it was really authentic spiritual guidance that you know, were really guided by, and therefore like the result of it would be at peace, like with how fucked up you were after the birth and how upset and, you know, no more kids, you know, unless it's a home birth, and how much it devastated you, that says something to me about your, like, incongruency around it, you know, that you weren't clear that this saved your baby's life, you know, and when women, even if I don't totally buy it, like, I know what it looks like on a woman who's like, I was guided, the C-section saved my life, like, we're at peace, like, and maybe sometimes that's cognitive dissonance, sometimes, I mean, it's all a story, the bottom line is
right
story,
right?
But that stands out to me. And I do think plays a part, obviously, of where we're heading, because, and I'm not saying you made the wrong decision or anything like that. That doesn't even exist. Like, you made the decisions you made with exactly where you were at and exactly what resources you had. And it is what it is. But do you know what I mean? Like, if it.
Yeah.
If,
no, I do.
Yeah.
I do get what you're saying. And yeah, there was a lot of. It was a dark time.
Yeah.
It was a dark time. I'll just put it like that. Even with me you know, just accepting, because, okay, so with readings, the reading doesn't tell you exactly what's going to happen, you know? So it tells you if there's things to be aware of, you know, like if there's concerns, if it's not, if it's a mountain versus you just walking down the street, you just, you know, so that could have been the transverse, like, you know, this labor could have been, because when we get to my fourth, I was in my journey for 3 days. And so 3 days of experiencing on and off waves, 3 days of, you know, all of those things, really it was almost four. So maybe that would have been, you know, like right. The reading isn't specific, like you're going to die. You know what I'm saying? And so, yeah, I do. I have, you know, danced with interpretation.
Yeah.
Okay, she was transverse, and that could have been like that. We could have been in that situation for 2, 3, 4 right. days, and then we could have, you know, and then we could have went into the next phase of this thing, you know, because I've seen a 7-day labor now, you know, and but at the time,
there's just where you're at in your own deprogramming process,
right?
You know, and again, it's not right or wrong or good or bad. It's just wherever the woman is at, you know, the choices then that are available to her, and the hospital on some level was still your place.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Even though parts of you were deprogramming and parts of you were fantasizing and parts of you, it wasn't like a fully congruent choice yet.
Right. That's real.
You know,
that's real. Which, and the irony of all of this is that, you know, it was so 2016, I saw my first birth outside the system. No, that was that 2015 or 2016. So that was like the first, that's the first outside of my own birth. That was the first birth I'd ever seen. So I didn't, outside of my own experience of feeling like, you know, damn, like I'm going through this or whatever, and it's highly medical births. In terms of the work as a birth worker, my footing really started doing postpartum work, teas, making teas and things like that. And then this sister invited me to her birth, and me, because I wasn't a trained doula, because I didn't have any information besides my own experiences, I didn't even ask her where she planned on birthing at. So when she called me, sent me her address.
Oh my God.
I just went.
And what number, how many babies had you had by the time you attended her birth?
Two.
So it's the third. Okay.
So it was right after my second.
Okay.
And so I had two. So I just went. It was her first baby. And I never took no doula trainings or nothing like that. And I just witnessed her birth, and I supported her in postpartum, and I didn't bat an eyelash. Like, I didn't think about it, because even though my experience were medical, I didn't see birth that way. Right. You know, like I was like, she called me. We met a couple weeks ago.
Who was at her birth?
It was just me and her husband.
Amazing.
Yeah. So, you know, that was my first introduction into like actually attending births. And so that was beautiful. The only thing is, it was funny because right after that, you know, when I shared the story, I had a sister friend who was like, you know, now that you out here, you know, attending births and shit, you should get some type of information. So, like, you should get some type of skills or something like that. And then it ended up being to where Wapio was coming down here. So somehow I got connected to Wapio through another birth worker that I hold dearly. And when I looked on her website and everything, because I was like, I knew I didn't want to do like Donna or nothing like that. So it just, and I'm already on a spiritual path. So I was just like, I think I could do this, because I had already said I'm not doing the medical midwifery route, especially not, by the way, you know, I experienced medical midwives, you know, and just really integrating those experiences. Because it's one thing, like I was still on the track after, you know, after our first child thinking, but I'm going to be better. You know, but I'm gonna, you know, so then it's like, nah, ain't no better. Like this is what the system is doing, exactly what it was designed to do, you know? And so, you know, once I realized that and got off that route, I ended up getting a bachelor's of science in psych. But in the process of that, I trained with WAPIO as a doula. And, you know, was attending births and have been attending births since then, and then ended up doing her her birthkeeping program as well. But mainly the bulk of my experience, honestly, has been attending births, like me attending births.
Right.
Like and I don't have a medical background. So yeah. It's always really been outside of my own birth experience of it being fucked up for my first few births. Like my perception of it was never medicalized. And I really was very protective of allowing people into my energy that were like that, because I wanted to protect. Like when she caught me and it was her house, I didn't think much of it. I didn't call anyone. I just went. So it's like I always had that about me, and that has followed me through the work, because you know that's really where it started in terms of my work. You know, it wasn't in the hospital, and I have attended hospital births since. I do not anymore, but yeah, that was never my preference, and it was never what resonated with me.
Yeah.
You know, and so fourth baby, did my spiritual work, was like, okay, it has to be at home. And so, you know, we conceive, I'm knowing I'm pregnant, COVID hits, I see, so my baby's 2020, my first home birth 2020. Mind you, oh, let me give you this disclaimer, I didn't get social media until the middle of 2020. So, and I found y'all like maybe 2021, like after that, you know. So with this, I was seeing the doctor, but like I told you, I had already danced with, you know, wild pregnancies to a certain extent. So I seen her one time, and then it was like, that was it. She didn't reach out to me. I didn't go looking for her. People say I fell between the cracks. I don't really see it like that. I see it as a spiritual thing, but I did also think back like, dang, what if I really was someone that was planning on birthing in the hospital? Like that was toe up, you know, but I really knew I wasn't birthing there. So I went through my pregnancy knowing I wasn't birthing there.
Yeah, but when women want to birth at the hospital, they like go to their appointments.
Yeah, right.
They're not like avoiding them. Like,
yeah. Right. They're like, COVID hit. I was like, great. Now I don't have to like
figure out
a way to get around these appointments. Like, I'm just not going. So we had one in-person appointment in the beginning. Then we had a virtual appointment, like pretty much at the end. And then I did an in-person. That in-person, when I tell you, she had me signing paperwork. She had me, like, she was literally, because I asked her about home birth. I said, because it ended up being, I need to share this, she was pregnant. So at the end of my pregnancy, when I went in to see her, it all came together, because it was like, oh, that's why you were, people would have perceived her as negligent, but I didn't care. And so, but she was pregnant herself, and she was a VBAC mom having another C-section. Like, I mean, she was a pregnant mom who could have had a VBAC, who advocates for VBAC, and she was having a C-section. What more do you need? What more do you need?
I mean, you have more than enough. Yeah.
So I'm in there talking to her like, so what is your reason for you? Like, I've been turned into the medical care provider and emotional support. So why are you getting another C-section? It's just easier. It's just safer. Aren't you a VBAC doctor?
She's not a VBAC doctor. She's a liar.
So I'm in there like hounding her, like grilling her. She's uncomfortable. Then I started talking to her about home birth. I'm like, well, people have VBACs at home. Like, women don't have to come here. And she's like, so is that something that you plan on doing? I don't know. She's like, well, I'm going to need you to sign this. And I just want you to know these are your risks. And honestly, you are measuring really big. So you're having a big baby. Like, she pulled every card. And so I left that appointment. Mind you, I'm wild pregnancy. So I hadn't been seeing her, hadn't been connected to anybody, hadn't told nobody that I wanted them at my birth. And then I said, okay, maybe I should reach out to so-and-so. Oh, I did have a friend. I did have a friend I wanted at my birth, though. One friend. But she had three. It was me, her, and her. So she had three. She might have had four clients at the time. So it was in the air. It was in the air. She was a doula, and it was in the air. So that's what that was with that. And then the sister that I'm telling you I reached out to, she was the person I worked with from my third pregnancy. So I was kind of like, I don't know. Because I do believe in energy transfers. And, you know, I really wanted a new situation. But I ended up, after that appointment, I was crying and I broke down. And I called her. I called her and I said, I feel like I want you at my birth. Like, I feel like I need support, you know, and this person may not be coming because she has other clients and things like that. And then that person hadn't worked out any money. Like, she's just a friend. We both attend birth. She was like, yeah, I'll come to your birth. But I got four other clients. So I didn't know. And so she ended up.
You're referencing the unlicensed midwife.
Yeah, the unlicensed midwife ended up doing her spiritual work and saying she was willing to come.
And so she said, like when you say an unlicensed midwife, I'm going to make an assumption that she is still a medical midwife who is unlicensed in Louisiana. Like her training, her background.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. She definitely. So with that being said, she said she let me know a couple of days later because I'm at the end. Babe finna come. She let me know a couple of days later that she was willing to support me in whatever way I needed support. That was really, we didn't go into what that meant. You know, and I danced with that after the birth too. We didn't go into what that meant because I didn't invite her. I guess in hindsight, we could have in that space of time, but we just didn't. And so, you know, she wasn't my care provider through the journey. So like, we didn't talk about anything. And so she came like, I think maybe right when I started having waves and dropped off a bag. And we, you know, we talked and, you know, she was like, yeah, girl, you know, shit gonna happen, whatever, whatever. And she left. And my sister lived with us at the time. So I had people around me, my husband, my sister, the sister friend I told you attends births. She ended up being available. So she was in and out. So there were people floating through my 3-day labor. My labor journey ended up being 3 days or whatever. That third day was really hard. Yeah. I never at no point, because I went to my son was born at 41 and 3, supposedly, never tracked my ovulation with that pregnancy. I mean, before pregnancy with that child or anything. So I really don't know, like how I know with this child, I didn't know what my body was doing pre-pregnancy. With this child, I knew what my body was doing pre-pregnancy. And so with fourth child, who knows? But on paper, I guess it's 41 and 3 is when he came or whatever. And so those 3 days were rough. They were rough. I remember calling a whole separate midwife friend. And she was a medical midwife as well. And she was like, why isn't so-and-so there? Like, you know, basically like the midwife should be like on my ass, monitoring me, da-da-da. And I was like, oh, no, we never discussed any of that. Like, that's not the standard, you know, that's not like the understanding or whatever. So, I mean, we were just floating. No one ever showed any aspect of fear. Like it was a beautiful flow, that labor itself. That last day, they ended up leaving like around, I'd say 4 p.m., the sisters, because everybody was coming in and out, and just really leaving it to me and my husband and my blood sister who lived in the household with us. They're like, y'all just need space. You just need to do your thing. Like, we're in and out. We've been in and out for the last days. Like, we just gonna take space. And I'm like, no, take space. But I knew on a deeper level, I knew they needed to. So they left. One other elder priestess in the community came and did some acupressure on me and gave me a full body massage. And then she left because she was taking care of her mother, God rest her soul, because she's an ancestor now. She's taking care of her mother. So she just came in to do that body work on me and she left out. And within, I'd say 2 hours of her leaving, active labor hit. So active labor hits. I just feel like I was finally in a space of relaxation and just letting it all be. I won't even say it with the massage, honestly, or the acupressure, because I know women be like, what can I do? It's really when your body says it's time and when your baby says it's time. And I feel like it was time for me, you know, and nobody was bothering me, you know, and when I look back, I was hosting. Like, I'm very much a, even though I wasn't raised in the South, I have roots and I'm very much a woman who cooks, a woman who loves like company, like friends coming over and, you know, that, and I was in that energy in my birth. Like, you know, my husband was cooking. I'm like, y'all want to eat? Like, cause my husband is a chef. And so, you know, it was like that. And it was just time for all that to stop for my baby to come through. Totally. And it was a party birth. It was a party birth. And so they left. And, you know, my labor started, that was about, she left at 7. I woke up, like I fell asleep to the massage. I woke up at 9 something p.m. and in active labor, like feeling it. And it hit all the way until 3:16 a.m. when he was born. Mm-hmm. And the sister doula that I told you I invited and the unlicensed midwife that I invited, they walked in 20 minutes before my baby was born. In the process, like right before they came, my sister, that's one thing that I can share. My sister, she had a breakdown in my active labor. She had never seen a live birth. I never groomed her. Like, I never prepared her for it. I was just like, this is my house. We having a birth. You live with us. You help with the kids. So, you know, you here. My kids were supposed to be here, but my mother-in-law had ended up coming and get them, and I had ended up starting labor. So that's what happened. But she was originally going to just be around with the kids or, you know, off doing whatever she was doing. But she and my blood sister actually ended up being home that day and at my labor. So she freaked out in active labor. We're 11 months apart. That's my Irish twin. And she was really feeling it. And I was pissed.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you are making this about you. My sister's a Scorpio. And I was like, you make everything about you. You're making it about you. And I'm a Libra. So I'm like, I'm always like, it's okay. And, you know, I'm like people pleasing in a way. And I'm like, well, I'm not doing this now. Like, F you. So we're going back and forth in my labor. When we're calling the sisters that are supposed to come to my labor, they're not knowing if like shit is really popping off. Or if like this is the real, like if it's really happened or if they're coming to mediate. So it took them a while to get there. But when they got there, like my water literally broke within like 3 minutes of them being in my house. Wow. Like they were walking in and my water is released. And me and my husband have been just, my back labor was intense. It was very, very intense. And so, you know, we were working through that. And that was really hard because I don't think I had mentally prepared because I had went through so much Pitocin without medication and all that. I just thought I could do anything. And I did get through it, but I'm saying I didn't think it would be painful. So I wasn't mentally prepared to experience discomfort in labor because I was like, well, they forced my baby out. Yeah. But it's like, no, your body still has to do shit. And some people feel things when your body is doing something.
But isn't it so much better?
So much better. Yeah. It's different. It was hard for me to ride the waves. It really was. I really did need that hands-on support that my husband provided me. I don't know what I could have done if he wasn't a part of that. And they walked in and the energy automatically shifted as soon as they walked in. And it's like, you know, people don't understand that even when people are not coming to do anything to touch you or whatever, it's still, they're still there, you know? And so the energy shifted. They really didn't expect me to be where I was. I was kind of like, before they came, I was a wild woman. Like I was in my birth. And when they got there, it's like, I just felt like I had to stop. But I was already there. Like, he was already coming out and stuff. But I just felt like I felt the shift. And one of the sisters that came did get scared. We hadn't done any monitoring, no blood pressures, none of that through pregnancy, through my labor, none of that. But she did panic and she did get scared. And that situation led to coach pushing.
No.
So that situation, that the fear that came up as a result of just walking in and me being fully in it, and like, wow, your baby's really about to come, led to coach pushing, which was not, like I said, there was never a conversation had. So I didn't know, you know.
From the midwife.
Yeah. So I didn't know what all that entailed or whatever. But coach pushing is something I did not want. You know what I'm saying? So I didn't birth him on my back or nothing like that. Like I squatted him out. He was 10 pounds, 5 ounces. I didn't tear at all. Mind you, in my second birth, my 8 pound, 12 ounce baby, where I did coach pushing on my back, I tore second degree perineal tear. For the mamas listening, I pushed out a 10 pound, 5 baby in a squat position with no tear.
Of course, the size of the baby is not equal to the tear.
They think it is, though.
I know, but people don't know anything.
Right. And so, yeah, I just wanted to share that. And so with that experience, I had to really look back and be like, we should have had a conversation about how someone was showing up in my birth. And then for me, I just really had to accept that I acted on fear. So I invited someone to my birth as a result of fear. And that fear manifested in my birth. Like I'm thinking I'm bringing someone in to protect me from something that I'm afraid of or from a thing, but it ended up perpetuating itself in a whole different way. And yeah, my birth was like, no one really fucked with me. Like but there were things that happened that I didn't want to happen, that if I had not picked up my phone and been like, yeah, shit is happening now, like it would have never happened, you know? Mm-hmm. But
I mean, some people fucked with you.
Oh yeah. I meant through the like labor itself. When it was time to get my baby out. Yeah, like the coach pushing part. That was something I really, you know, didn't want. And that definitely, you know, occurred. I really wanted to feel that fetal ejection response. And I didn't experience that. Yeah. Like, and so, you know, I know that that's a result of the whole energy and the panic around like, holy shit, your baby's coming out, you know, yeah, versus. Yeah. And so fast forward.
Yeah, I just got to time check us. So we're past an hour. And in 8 minutes, I'm supposed to do another interview. So basically, yeah, we got to kind of figure out a way.
Okay.
So we've got, let's just say like another, like, I mean, 8 minutes at the absolute most.
Okay. Okay. So my fifth baby, we conceived him in the Texas woods. I was supposed to be on call. Magically got a cover for this birth with a birth worker that aligned with me and the mom, the family, and was ovulating. Had already had two previous situations where we felt like we conceived, had the conversation about wild pregnancy and free birth, and let husband know, look, this is the only route for me. Nobody, not sister, not nobody, you know? And so had opened up that space to conceive, you know? And so we conceived our baby. We conceived our baby in the woods outside of a cabin. Yeah. Outside of a cabin. Our first family, like nature, like, you know, like our first cabin stay, our first, you know, experience. Our children slept outside with our spiritual community. And so that was beautiful. My person from the very beginning, like, because I had to deal with in past pregnancies, like the monitoring by choice, all these things are choices that I made, y'all. But because I made those choices, it was like, I just wanted to do the polar opposite of all of it. I did. I said, based on this, I know when I ovulated, my due month is March. My baby's coming in March. I said, there's a new moon. There's a full moon. And at the end of my pregnancy, I found out that my uncle who had transitioned, his birthday was March 18th. So I said, it's one of them dates, probably. Who knows? He ended up being born March 18th.
Hmm.
But that was the extent to which I did any of those things.
Yeah.
I never did blood pressure. I didn't get into any of those things. And it was because I was like, for what? Like divine intelligence, like natural intelligence. Before we had all of these things, we were just pregnant and we just had our babies. And I ended up, because I was like, I fell in love with the podcast. And I was like, I really want to figure out a way to contribute. And I was like, I'm gonna buy this Free Birth Society. It was a class y'all have about free birth. So I ended up buying it. But really what gave me life, I think I went through 40, 50%, something like that. But a lot of that, just through attending births and stuff like that, I was fortunate. Most people don't have that birth experience, so they don't know the things. A lot of it I already knew. But for me, those episodes were life. Like, y'all have, now when clients come to me for a free birth, which is not, it really, the ones that actually want to free birth, like not they're trying to hire me, but I'd be like, y'all need to get on this class. Y'all need to go get this from I think it's Audible or the podcast thing. Yeah, y'all need to go on there because like it was life changing hearing those women's stories. My children still sing that into the wild I go, into the wild. Like it changed my life. Yeah. Just hearing the real life experiences of women, you know, it's life changing. And so I just feel like whenever I did, because there was a period of time where I felt like my baby should have been moving, but my baby wasn't moving, but my baby before had moved by that time. And I got in my head, I just would cut on the podcast. Like anytime I would just, you know, get overthinking, like we are doing this. Like, stop. Why are you overthinking? And so, yeah, I want to share that. That was like, when people talk about prenatal care, I'd be like, I was listening to the podcast. Like that was a part of my prenatal care. Like, but really outside of that, meditation was my friend. Meditation was my friend, walking meditation mainly. And really just allowing things to be what they were. Like I was able to be pregnant without the extra shit, which allowed me to zero in on what was important. And I didn't take like supplements or nothing like that. Like, but if I felt like I needed something, I would eat more or, you know, I would hydrate more or I would take a walk, you know? And so I feel like I was really able to zoom in on what my body needed because I didn't have all the outside noise telling me what should be happening to me and what's normal. And it really, I mean, it changed me as a birth worker going through a fully wild pregnancy because it was like going through that shit. It's like, it just make you check yourself. Like you don't know anything because at the end of the day, that's her experience. That's her body. Like, who are you? And so it's changed me. It's really changed me. And I'm thank y'all.
Yeah.
Thank y'all. And y'all class is beautiful as well. Like it really is. It just, you know, when you're not doing all the, when you're not trying to be heady about it, it's like, you know, so I didn't want a heady experience and y'all do a beautiful way of communicating everything. But, you know, for me as a person with birth experience, I was just like, I'm not trying to think. I ain't trying to, you know, so it was certain things, but it was like, but those fucking, that podcast, like it was remarkable, impeccable, because you can't make that up. You can't make a woman get on here and lie.
Right.
And so it's thank
certainly
y'all.
Certainly not 250 of them.
Yeah, so thank you guys. My fourth pregnancy was what it was. It was wild. I had no problems. I never had fear about my pregnancy itself. My baby started moving. Like, I asked spirit to guide me, like, what, you know, what's up? is my baby okay? Within a week, my baby was moving. So boom, that moved. My major concern in pregnancy was my husband was going to miss my birth. And he was the only person. Invited to my birth, my nanny, at the end, I was like, I think I want her here to manage the children because I didn't know my children were going to be, you know, present. You know, we have four children. So that was that. And she ended up, it's so funny, she ended up being in our guest room sleep with her son. So I wanted her to manage the children, but my baby came in the middle of the night.
Yeah,
and then take pictures if she could. But I was trying to get my husband to go get her, you know, because I'm about to have my baby. My labor was like 3 hours, like my real, like where I had to be with my waves and what I was going through. That was 3 hours. And I was completely alone. My husband came home and everything started. He walked in about 11:30. Yep, he walked in about 11:30 from work. And stuff just start happening. And, you know, I tell people all the time when it comes to my active labor itself, I did meet my shadow side. I did start to have doubts. It was never about uterine rupture. It was never about my safety or my baby's safety. It was really like I started having multiple needs. Like I needed somebody fanning me. I needed some water. I needed to use the bathroom. I'm changing Chuck's pads. I actually was in this chair, laboring in this chair for a good bit because that was what was working for me. And it was like I started having multiple needs and I was like, maybe I should have invited my mom. Like, because my mom only went to my first labor. I have this thing where it's like, if something bad happened at a birth and you was there, it's like, I'm not fucking with you. So she had never been to a birth of mine again. But I was like, maybe my mom could have been here. Because my husband, he was really exhausted from work. And he was on the couch. And the thing was, for I had to really explain to him why I didn't want someone here. Like someone who had at least been to a birth or something. And someone who would be here supporting me. I had to really like explain that to him because the way he experienced my fourth birth and the way I experienced it, like he felt like everything was perfect, everything was good, the sisters came through, you did it. Like it, he didn't, but then I had to unpack it with him. And so once I unpacked it with him, he got it, but he was still like, you know, my husband works 15-hour days. So he was like, I may not be no good. Totally. So when he left for work, like we knew what it was. We knew the baby was gonna come in the middle of the night and we knew we were not closing our restaurant. We own a restaurant. And we knew we weren't closing it that day. So he wanted to close. I was like, no, I don't want you around here. Cause that puts all that pressure on. What if this is 3 days? Uh-huh. What if this is a week, you know? So we're like, no, life go to normal. Work, go do you. So then he came back and it was full blown, but he didn't have the capacity. And so he got me something to drink. He was like, you all right? You know, I'm all right, whatever. He went in there, he laid down, and then I called his name when it was go time. And he ran a bath water. I'm thinking, I went through all this work to get our tub renovated. I'm thinking I'm a birth in the tub. I get in that tub. I'm in there a few minutes. I'm like, get me out of this tub. So I'm getting out the tub. I'm taking steps from the tub. I drop down. It was over. Like, my baby was sliding out, and my baby was born and in call. So I mean, I did not push. Mm-hmm. Like it was just like, and I was like, is that the baby?
And he's
like,
gosh. The baby's
like, it, no problems. Like everything really flowed. And you know, it was a beautiful birth experience. It was a highly spiritual birth experience. And the only thing I can ever say is that, you know, at that point, I just felt like maybe my mama should have been around, you know, to be able to nurture me. Cause I was changing my check pads. Cause I was all messy and I'm a little bit OCD. So I'm like, you know, whatever. But then I got to a point where I was just peeing all around. I was just pissing, but I was like, maybe I could have had my mom here, but it was never like, I need medical attention. No, I need help.
I think after the party birth in your home, I think that some part of your soul needed to know what it was like to be alone.
Oh, yes.
You know, like you couldn't really justify Not that I'm saying your mom would have done anything like wrong or whatever, but I get it. I get the like, okay, this is just me and my very tired, exhausted husband, you know,
Yeah,
like,
me versus me.
yeah, I get that.
Yep.
That's, I mean, I haven't had that many births, but that's how I felt. I didn't have a party birth, but I had my sister and then like a soul sister and my husband at my first, and something just, I just knew I needed to know what it was like to just be alone. And I don't know that I'll
Yes.
always choose that, but I just needed to know what it was like.
Right. Right. And I was gonna say the only other thing is I would have, like I told my husband, I think with the fourth birth, because they were like up on me, even though they weren't like technically like doing shit. So when it was time for the baby to come, and you know the baby's coming out, he was like so close, and like I really did want a halo. Like I was like, get
Yeah.
back. But he, that was just his, like it was almost like he was like, well, if somebody else isn't doing it, he has to step in and do that. But you know, so we didn't thoroughly go, like I did tell him, okay, well, if I pass out, I'll probably be okay. But if I'm not okay, call the people. Like he knew basic things, but my husband ain't never read a birth book. He don't
Yeah.
get into all of that, you know, even though he's conscious and healthy, he just don't get into all of that.
Yeah, he
And
doesn't need
I'm
to.
grateful. I'm so
Right.
grateful he's not, but he did, like, you know, he was like trying, like he was like, can I catch the baby? I was like, no, I'm like, the baby gonna go on the ground. It's either I'm catching the baby or no one's catching the baby. Like that's how I
Totally.
felt. And so, you know, once the baby came out and everything, I said, go get Mariah so she could take some pictures. And he did. And my placenta was out in 2.5 hours. I regret moving, but my baby shitted on me within like 3 minutes of being born. Poop everywhere. Got into the tub, which, you know, I shouldn't have done. And I just feel like that just delayed my little placenta process. And you know, but I barely bled. And yeah, it was just my placenta, it took, I was in a tub for about 1 hour, then I got out, and then I was by the bed for about 1 hour and 30 minutes. Yeah, it took about 2.5 hours, which I mean, seeing births, that happens, but I do feel like, because I've waited for a placenta for 8 hours before, which people be thinking is crazy, but like I'm not. Like I'm, she ain't pulling out her placenta. I'm damn sure not pulling out her placenta. So what we gonna do? Like we gonna wait. And so, you know, that's what it was. But I know that I did too much in that immediate postpartum. Like I should have stayed where I was at. I should have got some wipes and just, you know, washed off and just sat there. But, you know, I got in the tub. I got a couple
Also,
beautiful pictures.
there's nothing wrong with it taking 2.5 hours.
No, it's not. It's not. But I think for me, I'd be going back and forth. But why did I start? I started fooling with it after about 2 hours, you know, and started, you know, traction. I started, okay, is it tight? Is it loose? Is it? And it was sitting right there in a yoni. So then
Exactly.
I pushed it a little bit. It came on out.
Yeah.
That was harder than, look, the baby slid out. The placenta didn't. So, and you know, it was
Aww.
good. I didn't weigh him or anything until after 24 hours. He doesn't have a name. He's never been to a pediatrician. Like, I just,
Wait,
you
how
don't
old is
need
he?
all of that. He'll be 4 months tomorrow.
So, what do you mean he doesn't have a name? What's the plan there? I'm assuming your other kids have names.
His name and ceremony is August 25th. It's a
Got it.
spiritual
Got
ceremony
it.
we go through.
Okay.
Yeah. And so,
So, do you
yeah,
just
you know.
nickname him or do you just call him the baby?
He has a million nicknames. My friend just called him Five recently.
Five? Oh,
Five,
number
fifth
five.
child. He
Fair
got a
enough.
million nicknames. I call him Papa because he looks like my grandfather.
Cute.
And he has, yeah. So, you know, but I
Yeah.
mean, the only other thing, postpartum was beautiful. Like, postpartum bliss is real when you don't have people fucking with you. And my breastfeeding, like I'm not gonna say it was easy to say. I've exclusively breastfed, like I breastfed all my kids for 2+ years. So to say I've been breastfeeding for a decade, you know,
Right.
it's like you would think that, and my last two were breastfed for 3 years, the last two. So it's like I was breastfeeding while pregnant with them. And with that, it's like you would think that it's just gonna be an automatic, you know, like my milk came and shit. But like he he had a little bit of a rough time, but I didn't involve no, but like just latching and like being on there, like it wasn't as smooth as like my last two children, like before him. But like I just worked with it. I really didn't.
Yeah.
Because once you bring people in, it's like, oh, he could have this. He could have. It's too much. It's too much. Yeah,
this is going to be your famous quote. Postpartum bliss is real when no one's fucking with you.
Yes. No, I swear to God. I swear. Nature walks. Seriously. Like, you could walk. You could take you a nature walk. Like, you know, I felt good. I stayed in bed. I don't know if we have this on, but I'm going to try to say this real quick. My mother was here for a month. The fourth week she left, my mother-in-law came. My mother left on a Saturday. My mother-in-law came on a Monday. She was here for a week. My nanny was paid for a whole week of being here after her. That's 6 weeks. I had full care.
Nice.
In terms of like my kids were taken care of, my food was prepared for me. Like I was good on that type of level. But I did not hire anyone, which I do regret. I didn't hire anyone to like do steams for me. You know, like stuff like that in terms of like to do, well, I could do my own belly binding, but you know, stuff like
that.
Like
on you.
Yeah. Like, I didn't have that. I didn't get like a postpartum massage, but like in terms of like my teas, my food, like all those things, like I was You're good. Awesome. I had a meal train, you know, and it was beautiful not to have to worry about shit. And there was a level of grief because I realized that so many women, regardless of if it's resources or whatever, like they just don't get that experience. And like women really need to plan for their postpartums. Like I did, and I should have planned more. I didn't meal prep myself or anything, but I had the meal train and stuff. But like women really need to plan for postpartum because like you really need rest. Like even if you, it's like, even though you can, should you be doing that? Like I felt fine.
Yeah, but like you said around the bliss piece, if you don't create the space and support, you won't get to experience the downloads and the higher like upgrades of consciousness that can only really come with the rest and the nourishment and the containment of that bubble. Like once you open your computer and you go outside and you kind of open the bubble, that stuff just starts to go away. But there's a real state of consciousness available to only immediate postpartum moms. But I don't, you know, obviously most women don't know that and they don't know how to nurture that. It's so much more than just the physical. There's like a real spiritual upgrade available. Seriously. In Eastern medicine, you know, they call it, or Eastern ways, they call it the golden opportunities for yes. women, and it's menarche and birth or postpartum.
Yeah.
And losing your blood. And yeah.
Yeah. That sacred window is, yeah. you know, it's important.
Okay, and we have to wrap.
I know.
But that was so fun. Oh, you're God. Such a great storyteller. Oof. And I'm so proud of you. You've really applied your learnings, you know, to just keep evolving. And it really shows. And yeah, your story will be really good medicine for a lot of women.
Thank you. Thank you for all that y'all do. You know, these are the ancient ways. And, you know, you guys are proof and I'm proof. But you guys are doing it in a major way that this is alive. This has always yeah. been here. Mm-hmm. And it's still here and it's not going nowhere.
Nope, not as long as we have bodies, you know, once everyone yeah. merges with the robots, maybe something new is going to try yeah. to happen.
Yeah.
But we'll hold it down.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Thanks, girlfriend. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. You have a beautiful day.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. You can support this podcast by donating to it through the link in the show notes below. And of course, leaving an awesome review on whatever platform you listen on. The more reviews, the more visibility the show gets. So let's spread the good word of Sovereign Birth. Don't forget, you can watch our podcast interviews on YouTube and see the women as they tell their birth and power stories. And you'll also find our viral free birth collection of epic raw birth videos on our YouTube. Make sure you're subscribed to our channel.
We've always got a lot going on at Free Birth Society, and you can find out all about it at freebirthsociety.com, at Free Birth Society on Instagram, and opt in to my newsletter below. We offer courses on free birth, authentic midwifery, the blood mysteries, as well as one-on-one coaching, in-person retreats, and of course, our annual women's gathering, the Matriarch Rising Festival. Our exclusive, private, vetted membership, The Lighthouse, is definitely something to check out if you're looking for a community of wise sisters to get guidance from and to meet in real life. Together we rise, sisters. We must speak our stories, fully claim our lives, and support one another. This is the living revolution, and I am so grateful to be in it with all of you. I'll leave you with our gorgeous Free Birth Society theme song, Wild Woman by Aruba Red.
I honor you for the wisdom you held, the ancient traditions of plant medicine and womb magic. I feel the spirit of the ancestors as I place my hands upon my belly. This sacred portal will be honored. Eons upon light beams of survival, withstanding the eradication of our power by design. I will not allow the separation of our young to be forced upon me. My sisters will no longer birth in captivity. The picket line redefined from burning our wild women to paralyzing us and drugging our babes. Strapped down in a clinical white bed, drying up the milk from our breasts, keep your needles. My family will never again be doomed to chase those dragons or your poison. We reject your fear. We choose love. Everything with intention. Death, ascension. I will fly and bring her back from the stars. Conscious consciousness.